What makes something funny?
What makes something funny?
What makes something funny?
Reed?
Well, to answer that, let's take a look at the origin of the word comedy, from the Latin comae, referring to the straightening of one's hair.
We should also notice the similarity between the verb comae and the verb come, meaning to move towards, but also a slang term for what the French call une petite mort, the little death. Comedy's very roots are found in death. That's why comedians are so afraid of dying on stage, why they want to go out and kill their audience.
Indeed, and the line between comedy and tragedy is very thin. For instance, the assassination of Abraham Lincoln was once considered tragic, but now it's considered one of the most hilarious moments in American history.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever it is, wherever you are. Thanks for subscribing, streaming, or downloading and listening to us on your computer or MP3 player. I'm Austin Titchener, one third of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, and you are listening to this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast number 340, Directing a Comedy. Comedy is much on our minds this week, as indeed it is most weeks. As we continue our 12-week tour of the UK, and as we plan for our 6-week tour of Australia this summer and 4-week tour of Asia this fall, and as Reed Martin and I continue to work on the script for the RSE's 9th stage show, The Complete History of Comedy Abridged, premiering this November 2013 at Cincinnati Playhouse in the Park, get your tickets now, I have also taken a gig understudying the Writers' Theater production of The Liar here in Chicago. It's been amazingly fun for many reasons, not the least of which is that I've been able to watch director William Brown work. Bill is a multiple Joseph Jefferson Award-winning and nominated director and actor, and it's been a real privilege watching him in rehearsal. I was able to pull Bill aside during previews a couple of weeks ago and ask him about his experience with comedy and whether he approaches a comedy differently from any other kind of play.
I've directed more comedies than anything else. I've acted in more comedies than anything else. But I believe the requirements are the same for comedy or anything, any kind of play you're doing. That truth, specificity, playing, listening, receiving, give and take. I mean, it's all acting 101.
Yeah.
And I taught a comedy class this winter at Northwestern, and you know, you start with, well, why is Private Lives hysterical, and Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf heartbreaking?
Right.
Both plays are about spousal abuse, and the best I could come up with was, there's less scarring in a comedy.
Yes.
I mean, they say horrible things to each other.
Right.
They do horrible things to each other, but somehow they move on. You don't end the play with the accumulation of these scars. Whereas, you know, in Virginia Woolf, they're pretty loaded down.
It's all about the scars.
Yeah.
Well, and also, there's a word we use a lot, is stakes.
Yeah.
I mean, it's got to be important in a drama and a tragedy. It seems to me it's got to be even more important
in
a comedy. Yeah.
I think so, too. And in point of fact, that's the point where it goes over into comedy.
Right.
So, you know, we're finding that now with The Liar, that the more truthfully, the more people want things desperately, the more they're willing to make a fool of themselves.
Well, that's true. And sometimes in a comedy, it's funny how high the stakes are for something so ridiculous.
Exactly.
So you started as an actor. Is that how you were one of those actors who said, I always wanted to do was direct?
No, never. No.
Okay.
If you'd asked me when I graduated from grad school if I wanted to be a director, I'd say, absolutely not. I just want to be an actor. and I moved to Chicago, and I believed that for years. It just never occurred to me that I wanted to direct. But one day, I loved to watch the process. I loved to watch.
Yeah.
I loved tech. I've always loved tech. If I wasn't on stage, I'd be in the house watching people put it together. And I was sitting in the house, and I realized that I had an opinion about how that light was hung. I had an opinion about that hemline. I had an opinion about how they were playing the scene. It was this eureka moment of, oh, wait a minute, maybe I want to direct.
Right.
The first time
Well, and it's interesting you say I have an opinion about it, but it doesn't, watching you work, it doesn't seem to be about control for you.
No.
You're not a control freak director. Do it my way or the highway.
I don't think so. I know I'm not. I'm not a control freak, although some people might argue otherwise. I do love the details of it. I mean, I want to talk about the shoes. I want to talk about... I love the details of it. And I love the design process. I have around me now an incredible design team with people sort of coming in and coming out at times. But we have a shorthand. We have a way of challenging each other. And it is a puzzle. I love figuring out the puzzle of it. The thing about me as an actor, I always had a strong, I always felt a responsibility to telling the story and a sense of architecture in building a role. So in a way, the transition to becoming a director wasn't that, it's telling a bigger story with more architecture. It was less a leap than I thought it was, would be.
What's always been funny, what's always been fun for me as a director is, yes, I had an opinion, but also for me, it was a way for me to kind of play all these other roles that I'll never be able to play.
Absolutely.
But to have an opinion, at least, in the formation of those roles.
Yeah.
And that's
got to
be fun.
Yeah. And I love... I do love working with other artists. I mean, that's what you have to do, whether you're an actor or a director.
Yeah, right.
But as a director, control's not the right word. But I'm at the epicenter of the discussion.
Yeah.
So I love that all the opinions come to me.
Right.
I love that I love the fact that it's my job to go yes, no, maybe.
Right.
My responsibility is to inform the play, is to clarify the play, is to make it come alive.
Yeah.
It's not something that lives on a on a sheet of paper.
What, and it, do you, I mean, I know the answer, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Your training as an actor must help your direction of other actors.
Yeah. Absolutely. I encourage more actors to become directors. Not that you have to act to be a good director, far from it, but I do know... You know, as an actor and working with many other directors and teachers and points of view and techniques, I have to speak to every actor in the language they understand.
Yeah.
And you know, by virtue of being an actor for 40 years, that's helped me enormously.
And you still go back and forth acting and directing?
I haven't acted in a couple of years now.
Okay.
And I'm okay with that.
Are you?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. You never know.
But yeah.
I'm fine for now.
Somebody was just asking me about this. He said, well, they said, aren't you frustrated about just sitting there watching? And I went, no, actually. I mean, I get plenty of opportunities to perform. I have no shortage of that. I'm just enjoying watching the process. Because for me, it's very different from how the Rideau Shakespeare Company works. But in a lot of ways, it's not.
Yeah.
It's still about all the same things you were talking about.
Yeah.
I loved one of the acting things you said early on in the rehearsals, which is that it is being real doesn't mean it should be small.
Right.
You know, it is still the actor's job to be heard.
Right.
To be heard by the audience.
Right.
And you were also talking about Molière. We share an opinion about Molière. It's one of our trivia questions is Molière still funny? Why not?
You know, I just had this discussion with Hedy Weiss, and I have to give her credit.
The Chicago Tribune critic,
The Chicago Sun-Times.
Sun-Times, excuse me, yes.
And she was doing an article about a Molière production as well as this production of Corneille. And I knew she was going to ask me the difference. And I just said, I'm sorry, Hedy, I think I'm just too stupid to answer this question. But I said, I feel that, and I did a lot of Molière as a young actor, a lot. I feel like... there's a dark cloud over the people in those plays. I find it. I don't quite know why I and I'm thrilled that other people do connect to it, but I don't. Mm-hmm. I don't. I've never wanted to direct it.
Okay.
And I said, and yet here I am doing this play, same century, France.
Yep. Yep.
And she said, well, is it that the characters in Corneille actually change? And it was, yeah, bingo, right.
That's
it. I'm gonna claim I made that up, but and it's very true. I mean, how you start in a Molière play is how you end,
mm-hmm.
and these characters genuinely in The Lyre grow, change, sometimes in painful ways,
mm-hmm.
Sometimes in difficult mm-hmm. ways. And I realized that if I didn't believe people could change, I would jump off a cliff.
Yeah. Well, why sit there?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, even in life.
Oh, I see what you mean. Yeah. Yes, right. Not just in theater.
Yeah, not just in theater.
You're listening to Tim Minchin, randomly standing here with Austin and et al. And you are listening to the Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast.
Where can you RSC the RSC? This month, June of 2013, you can see us in Columbia, Maryland in the U.S. and in the U.K. this month. And next month, you can see us in Aberystwyth and Southport. There's only a few tickets left in those venues, so hurry. Lincoln, Barnsley, Barrow, Inverness, Leeds, Ayr, Stirling, South Shields, Musselburgh, and then finally London for 4 weeks at the Leicester Square Theatre in July and August. But we'll be back touring the U.K. this fall, plus we'll be in Australia, Asia, and all across the U.S., including a 7-week gig at the Cincinnati Playhouse in the Park. All those 2013 dates are up on our website. As always, the very best way to stay up to date about all of our worldwide performance dates is to sign up for the Reduced Reader, our email newsletter. Go to ReducedShakespeare.com and click on the link to subscribe and check out our touring page for specific box office venue and ticket information. And now back to my conversation with Bill Brown, where I was telling him about one of my favorite aspects of watching him work.
One of the things I most admire is your patience. You seem to want to let the actors discover everything. How tightly are you clinging to your telling yourself, just get it up? Well, let me get up there and do it for you.
I do get up there, you know, way too much. But really, it's really their performance I'm interested in.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess I could imagine my performance, but I just don't want to see it.
Yeah,
I mean, right. I don't know how I could see it. So,
right.
So I find myself trying to stay attuned to oh, you want to go that way,
yeah.
and celebrating that. I'm not convinced you can truly convince an actor to do something they don't want to do.
Well, yes,
I think that you'll sabotage all of it, yeah. And certainly them. If you force that point. But if people feel that they have planted in this soil, if
right.
they have, you know, if they're invested in the production and the rehearsals and what they bring to it, I think the long range effect of that is 3 months from now, it'll still be the same play.
Yeah, yeah.
In the best sense of the word.
Right.
You did the most important thing first. It's really well cast.
Yeah,
this is a great cast. And when you direct all these plays, or when an artistic director comes to you and says, what about doing The Lyre? Do you go down the list of actors you've worked with and go, great, I know a guy who can play the lead guy? I mean, do you say, great, let's have auditions and see who we can find?
Every play's different.
Okay.
I after I spent time with the play, I knew I needed a young cast, and I knew I needed personalities.
Yeah.
And I don't know that, I mean, all three of them, I don't know that I've ever thought about casting a play quite like that. I enjoy auditioning. I love people I've never worked with. I mean, I love new blood. I love, mm-hmm. and I try and keep a balance. These are all my friends.
Oh, good. Okay.
Well, and in a play like this, too, and in an intimate space like this,
yeah.
too, you want actors with charm.
Yeah.
And charm is a thing you can't act.
I know.
You either got it or you ain't got it.
I know. And maybe comedy is something that, you know.
Oh, interesting.
I mean, it's certainly, you know, These people are really funny. Our rehearsals are funny.
Yeah, they are funny.
Well, let me ask you this. Because you trained at American Conservatory Theater in San Francisco, which is where I grew up in the Bay Area, and you're only a few years older than I am. So I don't think I saw you in anything, although I might have. What was that like? What was that training program like?
I actually, up until that point, thought was a musician. I was more of a musician than I was an actor. And that really didn't quite work out. And I decided, okay, I want to be the best possible classical actor I can be. And that Mark Singer, Bill Ball directed Taming of the Shrew had just come out. And anyone who even thought about being an actor saw it on PBS.
Yep.
And I said, if I can't go to that school, I don't want to go anywhere. And the conservatory was across the street from the theater. And it was exactly the right thing. Yeah. At that time, there was quite a range of acting perspective at ACT with Bill Ball still there, who was still there at the time, offering this idea of theater as celebration, and it deeply affected me. At the same time, I had teachers who were absolutely, you know, Stanislavski, the tradition of truth and given circumstances and all the things that you know I call acting 101. So it was perfect for me. There was this sort of grand celebratory aspect of it, and then this nuts and bolts part that was very, I needed that as well.
Well, and it's all connected, isn't it?
I mean, it totally is.
Yeah, I mean, you also just at one point in rehearsal were talking about the difference between a Chicago actor and a New York actor.
Oh, my.
But I sort of loved it. In the back of my mind, I always go, because I'm from California, the Chicago actor will do it this way. The New York actor will give it a big finish.
Yeah.
And in the back of my mind, I'm going, well, yeah, in California, you know what? We'll do it both, motherfucker.
I know.
You know?
Yeah, that's good.
But that's sort of what we have to do with the RSC.
We got in this discussion about technique, and it's all technique.
It's all technique, yeah.
In order to find an emotional truth, you need a technique to get there.
Yeah.
So I get confused when people ask a technical question. Well, it's all technical questions.
And didn't you say you had some improv background as well?
That was my initial acting training, was in improv and story theater. And the fact that I almost accidentally ended up in Chicago, where all that began, kind of fascinates me. And I think that Chicago doesn't get credit for, you know, what Paul Sills did and story theater, Nichols Nickleby, Les Mis.
Peter and the Starcatchers right now.
Yeah. Jersey Boys.
Yep.
That's what that is. Yeah. And I didn't plan it this way, but this is where I ended up, where I think a lot of that started.
That's it for this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast. The Writers Theater production of The Liar has been selling out regularly and getting rave reviews, which for some reason don't mention the understudies at all, which is weird. But if you're going to be in the Chicago area before it closes on July 28th, 2013, check out The Liar if you can. Go to writerstheater.org for more information. Then send us your thoughts on comedy via email to feedback@reducedshakespeare.com. You can also post comments on many of our website pages, and you can post reviews on iTunes. You can interact with other fans at our website and our Reduced Shakespeare Company Facebook fan page. You can also become a subscriber to our YouTube channel or become a Twit. Follow us on Twitter @Reduced. You can find easy links to all these social networks at our website, ReducedShakespeare.com. Thanks, as always, to webmaster Matt Rippey, terrific tall tale teller Matthew Croak, music by John Weber and Garage Band. You also heard excerpts from our Reduced Shakespeare radio show, available from iTunes. Our random fan shout-out this week goes to Cheryl Ott. No reason, it's just random. Special thanks to Tim Minchin, who did not win a Tony for his amazing score for Matilda last night, and absolutely should have. And thanks very much to you for listening. I'm Austin Titchener, 340/1020 of the Reduced Shakespeare Company.
In fact, it was Abraham Lincoln who said, on his deathbed, "Dying is easy, comedy is hard."
This podcast is a production of the Reduce Shakespeare Company, reducing expectations since 1981. Go to reduceshakespeare.com for performance dates, actor bios, email newsletters, and so much less.
So much less.